If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Your coffee would never get cold. Your flight would always be on time. And your mattress would always respond to you and your unique sleep needs. Sleep Number mattresses are designed to respond to your body and shift with your changing life, helping you fall asleep faster and stay asleep longer. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.
Before we put people to sleep, Bob, we better get into this podcast. You wanted it. My dad wanted it. The calls for Jerry Jeff Walker as intro music. You got your wish. Now, did that scratch your itch? That didn't really get me fired up for this podcast.
You love Jerry Jeff, though.
I like Jerry Jeff. I like him.
Your parents and my brother love the guy.
Yes, yeah, yes. Okay. They've seen him down in Belize.
Really?
In concert, you're right. You've been a big fan your whole life.
Yep, I've never seen him, but I've got a bunch of his CDs, and certainly followed the guy, part of his cult.
The Jerry Jeff, there's a Jerry Jeff Walker cult?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, well, I think we're going to have to pick a different Jerry Jeff Walker song, though. That was a little slow. I had to cut it down.
Man. We didn't get to the chorus even, you know?
All right, well, let's see. Let's crank it up here. Does it get better? A little piano.
Here's to you, old skinny Dennis.
Is that where it really gets going there, Bob?
Further on, but we don't have time. Well, we got a season to talk
about.
Well,
let's give it a shot.
All right.
Okay. Oh, now you're talking.
Yeah.
There we go. Okay, let's talk about the Packers.
All right.
Big game this week, Bob. Maybe you heard.
I would say, yeah.
Everybody's been talking about this game. Gosh, what is it? 5, 6, 7 months now. It's finally here. I think the players, the coaches, the media, the fans are just ready to kind of get this show on the road. What jumps out at you, Bob? You've taken a close look at this Niners team. What strikes you?
The Niners have weaknesses. Number one, I mean, they have the wide receiver problem. They got Anquan Boldin, who's really a fine player, but he's like 32, and he can't run. He can't, you know, separate.
Oh, what about the Super Bowl?
He's a power player underneath, horizontal, red zone. I mean, he's not going to force Sam Shields and Tremont Williams. They're going to be squatting out there. Mm-hmm. These other guys, Marlon Moore. I mean, Crabtree was a huge part of Kaepernick. Remember the game last year and for Alex Smith? You go down about 8 yards outside the numbers. Turn back in. He's got enough speed to threaten. He'd turn, use his big body, play basketball, and it was 8-9 yards. It happened all season long. That's a tremendous loss, you know.
I think I saw a stat where he targeted Crabtree, what, like 86, 87 times, something like that over the last 8 games, and he was looking for him a lot.
10 times a game.
Right, I mean, Vernon Davis was kind of faded out of the offense there for a little stretch.
So that's their problem. They got other just 3 guys along with them. They lose Randy Moss, who gave you a threat. All right, so it's all the Vernon Davis show there. And in the secondary, I mean, they lose an excellent, physical, tough nickelback, Chris Culver, who really should have been starting. And they lose their great, intimidating safety, Deshaun Golson. So they replace Culver. There's a huge drop-off there to Nnamdi Asamoah, who's over the hill. And free safety, Trent Baalke, the GM, traded up for Eric Reed from LSU. He's played well. He's a really good-looking player, but the loss of Culver. But they're not as good throwing the ball, and they're not as good in the secondary. Now, they have a tremendous amount of strengths, but you asked me about the weaknesses, right?
Okay. All right, well, let's go to the strengths, and I think everybody kind of has an idea.
They have a quarterback who's kind of a phenom. They have a running game, and they have an offensive line big time. They have Justin Smith back without that huge contraption on his torn triceps. They have linebackers second to none. And they have a brand new kicker in Phil Dawson, who's a lot better than David Akers. And they have the best punter in the business in Andy Lee. It's a pretty talented club, Ty.
It is. It is. I mean, it doesn't get better than this for a season opener. And I mean, we were talking about this a year ago going into that week one game, and it was the same type of questions then that the Packers are being asked now. Are you tough enough? Is this team soft? If you get kind of dragged into that street fight, are you going to punch back? There's been a lot of changes since then in personnel, in scheme, maybe being ready for the read option this time around. When you look at that, just defending Colin Kaepernick, beyond the read option, just defending Colin Kaepernick, do you believe that the Packers are ready this time?
Boy, they're as ready as they'll ever be. I mean, they've got to be ready, Tyler. They've had to sit on this game for 8 months. They knew it was on the schedule for, what, four, I suppose, April it was announced. Yeah, Dom Capers. I mean, can you imagine what McCarthy said to Capers in their meeting after that, the week after that defeat?
Right.
Must have been awful. And then what he said to all those assistant coaches and what Capers said to all those assistant coaches. I mean, it's all sanitized what you hear, but you can just imagine what was going on behind closed doors. It can be brutal in those NFL offices, and I'm sure it was. So do you see, I mean, you've written stories about this read option. Do you feel Green Bay has the talent now on defense or the speed, whatever they need to defend this thing?
Boy, it's a loaded question. I don't know the answer to that, but they cannot be any less prepared for it than they were last year. I mean, as I wrote in June, I mean, there were players on the team that told me they practiced next to no read option leading up to that game, and part of it is they didn't have a lot of time. If you remember, you know, the 49ers had a whole extra week to get ready with the bye week. Green Bay was coming off that game against the Vikings. They had a few days to prepare. They were being very careful with injuries, all of that. Mm-hmm. And they just didn't get around to practicing the read option. Your assignment is here. Your assignment is there during the week as much as they probably should. And you see them out there, this training camp. I mean, it was a daily thing. They were spending 20 to 30 minutes a day just going over assignments. So they weren't. Yeah. Some people think when you practice the read option, oh, that's why they brought Vince Young in to run around. No, it's like assignment football. And half speed and knowing, all right, you have the handoff, you have the quarterback, they do this, you do that. So I think they're going to be prepared this time around. I mean, that had to be a big part of it, but also a big part of just defending Kaepernick in general is personnel. You know, we can talk about toughness and debate that all day. They just really weren't athletic enough in spots too, so they obviously think they're going to be more athletic, bigger, tougher across the board. They get Nick Perry, Dayton Jones will probably play a little bit here. In the secondary, Charles Woodson is out. MD Jennings and Jerron McMillan are in. Casey Hayward's out for this game. But they have Micah Hyde, a cornerback, who in the preseason, it seemed every time he was in the slot, he was blitzing. They didn't have that player last year. Remember Hayward, when he came scot-free on that blitz, totally missed Kaepernick for a sack. That was big play. So they do have some new personnel, even though this is a team that doesn't go out and sign free agents. Are they ready? I think they are. I'm actually predicting Green Bay to win this game, and a lot of people aren't. I think that they're going to be more prepared. I think they have the players in place to at least contain Kaepernick to a degree. He's going to get his, but they don't have a lot of weapons on the outside. I think that this time around, they're ready, and we haven't even talked about the research that they did during the offseason. I mean, they sent the defensive staff down to Texas A&M for a day. Dom Capers spent a day with the defensive coordinator at Wisconsin, who at Hawaii faced Kaepernick, did a good job against him there. I mean, they were always talking to these college coaches. So you're right. It's been this 7 to 8 month buildup for this game. In San Francisco, though, I think we have to talk about this a little bit. They're going to have some wrinkles too, aren't they? I mean, they're going to have a few new things going on with their offense. They're just going to come out and run the same old stuff they did that night at Candlestick.
Not with Greg Roman, as creative as he is, and Harbaugh. I mean, these guys are top-of-the-line offensive coaches, and Mike McCarthy and Clements, they got to have their stuff on because they're facing two of the best. It's quite a matchup of offensive minds. Tyler, when you look at Green Bay compared to that night 8 months ago, all right, DeJuan Harris is gone, Eddie Lacy's in. Is that a plus or a minus for Green Bay?
I think it's a plus against a team like San Francisco that you get a back who's bigger, stronger, still nimble enough, I think, to find the hole. I mean, the buildup for Eddie Lacy's debut has been a long time in the making as well. I mean, this is supposed to be, savior's kind of a strong word, but he's supposed to be the answer that they haven't had at running back the last 3 years, somebody who's going to take advantage when a defense goes nickel. I mean, that's their thinking here is if they go no huddle, They get those extra DBs on the field. They want Eddie Lacy to take advantage of that. You talk to the offensive linemen, and they say it doesn't matter who's at running back. We got to give him a hole, and Mike McCarthy has to be dedicated. Josh Sitton even said himself, like, we need a coach to be dedicated and committed to it, and we need to give him a reason to be committed to it. But Eddie Lacy's going to be a big part of it.
So in game one last year, they had a big back, Cedric Benson, and Cedric was 9 for 18.
Would you characterize him as the same type of back as Eddie Lacy?
No, but he's a lot bigger than DeJuan Harris.
Right.
He's closer to Harris than Lacy. Lacy's closer to, you know what I'm saying.
I got you. But
let's go to DeJuan Harris in the playoffs.
Okay.
They opened it up. I mean, the guy was great that night. 11 carries, 53 yards against that front and those linebackers. The guy really helped Aaron Rodgers in that passing game that night. They couldn't see him. He was outstanding, hurtling in down that middle of that defense on that touchdown run.
53 yards on 11 carries. It's a good night, but
all right.
I think that you're right. That one of the problems was exposed. They got away from the run in the second half.
So do you see, out of a conventional set, them running the ball with Eddie Lacy against the 49ers?
Sure.
Wow.
They want to get into the hurry up, though. And they want to force San Francisco to keep the same personnel out there.
Do you see Lacy playing well from a hurry up or no huddle situation?
It's going to be interesting. I mean, what was Nick Saban's comment last year at Alabama? He said, is this really where we want the game to go? I mean, he's anti no huddle. Mm-hmm. Alabama, I mean, they did some 2-minute drill stuff and some hurry up, but they didn't run this no huddle exclusively like everybody else is in college football. So
yeah.
Eddie Lacy said it was a little tough at first, but once he got the signals down, kind of got the speed down, that he says it wasn't that bad. We'll find out.
All right, let's look at so Green Bay's got a lot of strengths going here now, and maybe their weaknesses without Brian Bulaga, right? So in that game, they had Bulaga right against Ray McDonald and Brooks, and they had Newhouse at left against a wounded Justin Smith and Alden Smith. All right, so now you got Bakhtiari, the rookie, against Justin Smith, who's on top of his game at age 33, and he's an animal, let's face it. I've seen him this summer on tape. He's not pretty. I mean, he blew up Matt Khalil of the Vikings that third game twice, 2-3 times. It's pretty fierce.
Okay, so you watched Justin Smith on tape.
Yep.
Do you remember the criticism last year? I believe it was the Giants were complaining about his tendency to hold.
Absolutely, he does.
Does he do that a lot?
Yeah, he tries to occupy the left tackle and left guard, so then Smith can run around, you know, on a TE. It would be a stunt.
That's illegal, right?
Yeah, technically.
How does he get away with it?
Well, the ump's not behind him anymore.
The ump is back.
This year he is too, right? He's still in the backfield. They can't see defensive holding, and he just dominated. And that's how Alden Smith, I mean, I don't think he's a great pass rusher. Not 33 and a half sacks, great, but 10 to 12 of those are all Justin Smith's sacks.
Yeah.
He just, remember that playoff game against the Saints 2 years ago? I've never seen it. Well, other than what Warren Sapp maybe did on those TEs with Simeon Rice and the Bucks, but boy, Smith and Smith on those things. So that's against Bakhtiari and Sitton, his first game at left guard. It's a heck of a tough assignment.
So, I mean, you wrote the column about David Bakhtiari as soon as he kind of took over there after your report on Brian Bulaga. You were high on him then. You didn't foresee this as colossal of a catastrophe as maybe outsiders did. You've seen Bakhtiari work now for a few games in the preseason. You've seen him at practice every day. Still kind of standing by your belief that they'll be okay at left tackle?
Well, I don't know about that, but I sure like the guy. I mean, it's a brutal assignment. I've seen all kinds of young tackles here over the years. Tony Mandrich, Ken Rutgers, Ross Verba, Derek Sherrod, John Michaels. A lot of left tackles around here have struggled, you know. So, but Bakhtiari's a poised guy. He's getting everything he can out of what he has. He really faces a tough road. I mean, almost every week there's a heck of a player. The guy's done a good job so far. Now he gets Justin Smith, who's not a speed guy. He's just a power, man. And that's, you know, Bakhtiari at 6'4 and a half, 304. That's probably the kind of player he would least like to face, I would think.
Interesting that Mike McCarthy kind of made a point to mention Marshall Newhouse the other day and earlier this week. You know, don't forget about him. There's a chance he could play. Do you think that Bakhtiari maybe has a short leash here? He gives up a bunch of pressures. I mean, remember Alan Barber?
I don't know. Would Newhouse, do you think he's more apt to go in at left tackle or right tackle?
I guess either or. He's played at both spots, but left tackle's where he really got the game snaps at. But I guess it's sieve there for whatever reason. You never know what could happen.
Yep. Anything else about this one? We could talk 40 minutes on this thing, Tyler.
Really. Well, you know, we really could.
I mean, let's move on.
Before we forget, though, I think we got to jump right into your column last week. Tackling at training camp. Before training camp is too far in the rearview mirror, Bob, created quite the response online via social media all over the place. Just kind of tell the listeners where you were coming at, where you were thinking with the column, and just how important you believe it is to tackle at training camp.
All right, their injury situation is unacceptable, right? And this is about the fourth year in training camp. And if you go back through all McCarthy's eight training camps, they always have more people scratched. 27 out of 31 games, and the other one was tied. They've had more scratches than the opponent. Something's got to be done. And he declared war on injuries starting in February when I talked to him, and that war was lost. I mean, it just didn't happen. What's my point?
The war was lost.
They had too many injuries. All right. What's my point? Tyler, we both played high school football. You played some college. All right. You got to harden your body to contact. It just stands to reason. And that requires not just the scrimmage and four preseason games. You do it with some periods of live tackling. You just do it the way the game has been played. I know you have different opinions, so I'm going to let me just finish
no,
my little
I don't.
One. Okay. All right. You got to toughen up your body, and some of the injuries that have occurred in these exhibition games, whether it be hamstring, quads, whatever, I just think sometimes bodies aren't in position to withstand contact if they haven't done it once every other day, once every third day, something like that. I mean, that's what I saw all the coaches in Green Bay do from the beginning to Holmgren to Sherman, Rhodes. Some periods of live tackling. 13, 15 plays. Now, 13 teams around the league have done it. I know there's a million factors on injuries, all right? But I'm willing to bet I would never second-guess McCarthy if he suffered an injury in one of these live periods. Never. That's the price you pay in football, and a lot of teams are doing this right now, and I think there's going to be more doing it. You can't be in fear of contact and hitting. You have to prepare your players to hit, no matter what the cost. You do it within reason. You do it sensibly, but you can't run away from it. All right, Mr.
Well,
Dunn.
Well, first, I thought that was a really good point in your stories. It's one thing to say you got to hit more, you got to tackle more. But you looked around the league and you saw these other teams that do it and didn't have this devastation of injuries, right?
Not this year. They haven't. Nope. Kansas City hasn't. Jacksonville hasn't. And what was the other example?
Well,
somebody else.
Okay, well, I'll say Kansas City and Jacksonville are two pretty downtrodden teams right now.
Right.
So they need a jolt of energy. They got to wake up. Overall, I agree with what you said in terms of just conditioning the human body for football, for contact. That you, I mean, I guess it would be like going through driver's ed and then going into New York City rush hour traffic. So if you're taking it easy in training camp. Not that they are. I mean, they have their periods.
Darn right they do. They run a tough camp. But with so many injuries, three practices had to go from pads to shells. I mean, that's just disruptive to McCarthy's plan. He only has so many practices. He's got this thing down to minute detail in his office, how he wants every practice.
Right.
He's got every practice detail his entire career.
Right. Well,
on
not,
a board.
Yeah.
And then it's disrupted because of injuries. You can't have it. It's got to end. There's a lot of things to look at. The medical staff, the training staff, the conditioning staff, the strength staff, they got to go ruthlessly. I use the word ruthless. They have to. And if it means changes, well, something's got to give, period.
But this is also 2013. It's not 1993 when you know,
right.
We got their. It's not pre-free agency in the 80s. These are $10 million, $20 million, $30 million investments that teams have out there. I mean, can you really risk those investments in practice? Allen Iverson, not a game.
You can't
practice.
Run as many live periods as Forrest Gregg did, Bart Starr, Lindy Infante, probably even not Mike Holmgren. They, you know, those in those years, you had 110, 115, unlimited amount of guys in camp. Now you got 90. No, you can't. You got a salary cap, which makes it tough. I'm just saying selected, smart, a few periods of live tackling to break these bodies into it before they line up on that family night scrimmage with 70,000 people and everybody's going nuts and there's injuries.
But they are fairly healthy going into this game, right?
Well, I don't know. You know, you got Bulaga and Harris on IR. You got a bunch of guys on the PUP list. Injuries didn't occur this summer, but for whatever reason, you know. We'll see how long Morgan Burnett and Brad Jones can go. I mean, they're on hamstrings. There's no guarantee they can both play an entire game.
Boy, I just think it's a sign of the times that most of these teams know that they just they can't push the envelope in practice and hit and tackle day in, day out when it's 90 degrees and risk their players when then A, don't have as many players in camp like you said, and the way that just the salary cap kind of is right now, I mean, you have four or five stars that earn a lot of money and you fill those you fill in with players around that. Can you really risk your stars? I mean, there was a point in your story where I think you said you should bring the quarterback down too, right?
No. Quarterback red wears red. He's never being hit. Ever.
Okay, ever.
I said, you know, make sure you got some shock troops at wideout and running back because you're going to tackle wideouts after the catch.
Sorry to put words in your mouth. I thought you said quarterback.
Not the QBs. They wear red.
Okay.
Untouchable. But everybody else is hittable. And like in the old days, in the inside drill, if you're going to have it live on the running back, which you probably don't, but even if a hard thud in a 9-on-7, now they use a half line inside drill. With a full-fledged 9-on-7, you know, get that 90th guy in camp as a running back. Some guy from Appalachian, 5'10", 225, who can soak up the action.
What's wrong with Appalachian?
he'll do it for per diem.
They just get somebody from the UP. Bring a few guys down from Escanaba.
Those are the tough ones. All right,
well, it is interesting, though. I mean, I don't think we're going to see a change. It's only going to trend in this one direction because of the money involved, the players involved. But we'll see how it pans out. They do practice fast, drill to drill. You were saying on our last podcast, right, that the tempo of practice is a lot faster than it ever has been.
Correct. It's a lot
and
faster than it was.
And it's a fast 15. Game. The game is going faster.
Correct. Correct. But the injuries keep proliferating here. And the Packers can be one of those 13. They can be number 14 next year and maybe try to do something different regarding these injuries. There's other things they can do different regarding injuries. I just think this is something to really, really think about.
So, bull in the ring, you think they should start doing that? The
Oklahoma drill, day one, man.
Yeah. You think they should, Oklahoma drill?
It ain't bad.
Okay.
I've seen it in Green Bay. You've seen it in high school.
Yeah.
All right, Ty. Now let's move on to another segment here, okay?
Is that what you call a segue in the radio business there? Yeah. Sorry, folks. Our segues are a little choppy.
Exactly.
They're a little choppy.
All right. We had a story here on Monday in our paper on written about number 50 by Tyler Dunn and the story of A.J. Hawk, and it was long, and it was beautifully written. And I read the darn thing twice, Tyler, and I cannot recall the last time I've ever done that. So it was outstanding. Bob. It's an award winner. And I learned so much about A.J. Hawk, and I'm sure every reader of the Journal Sentinel feels the same way. So why don't you tell us a little bit about it and maybe some of the things that weren't really in the story, too.
Well, geez, thanks for that intro there. Yep. Holy cow. Well, I guess A.J. Hawk is a player that I think us in the media, fans, outsiders in general, just don't really understand. And so you look at his longevity, his career, he's going on his eighth season. And in this NFL, in today's game, where players just come and go, there's always somebody better waiting for an opportunity. You just wonder, I mean, why is this guy still here? I mean, there's a reason that A.J. Hawk is still around in Green Bay after all of these years, the second longest tenured Packer on the team. So I don't know. I guess the idea just kind of started where A.J. Hawk, when he talked to reporters, I believe it was just a couple days into camp, and he talked a little bit about how he changed his workout regimen. He believed that physically he was peaking He shed some pounds. He went to lighter workouts, was in and out. And it just kind of got me thinking, you know, what's the story here? I mean, what is he doing behind the scenes that we just don't see? Because, look, and both of us have really criticized him, right?
Sure.
Online and in paper that how in the heck, I mean, can you just let Desmond Bishop walk? I mean, here's a guy who just has forced turnovers. He's been a big play waiting to happen. And A.J. Hawk, you know, maybe I'm wrong in the way I worded it, but I really thought that his pay cut was more of a kind of a stamp of approval than a slap in the face. I mean, they could have let this guy walk, and he was a little overpaid, but they decided to keep him around for whatever reason. So basically, with this story, I just kind of wanted to figure out why and talk to players in the locker room, coaches, his dad for a long time, and some scouts around the league on the outside who kind of see it through their own prism. And you just keep hearing the same thing is, okay, yeah, maybe he doesn't make those big plays. A.J. Hawk himself even said, if you want me to make the big plays, hey, I want to make them too. Sorry, can't help you. But the guy's been durable. I mean, going on 8 years, he's missed 2 games, and that was the popped calf muscle there in 2011 where he basically couldn't run other than that. And he's played through a wrist injury. He's played through hamstrings, through chest injuries, everything really. And that kind of all stemmed from high school when tore his PCL, missed some time as a senior, really worked to get back from that, learned to take care of his body. But, I mean, you look at the numbers just at linebacker, inside and outside, since Hawks' rookie season and the games missed. Nick Barnett, 21 games. Brady Papinga, 15. Clay Matthews, 6. Aaron Campman, 7. Brandon Chiller, 14. Desmond Bishop, 27.
Wow.
Brad Jones, 13. Zombo, 23. DJ Smith, 10. That's 136 games combined. Hawk has missed 2. So durability, they know what they're going to get. There's no surprises. Accountability is the word he kept bringing up. Knowing the defense inside and out. I think that, you know, a lot of the big plays around A.J. Hawk, and I keep talking here, I know a lot of it's not really that exciting, but it's just the truth. I mean, he gets the defense in the right play. He makes the calls. Guys lean on him, rely on him. Ryan Pickett said that if you took him out of the defense, it would be like taking Aaron Rodgers away. They really believe he has that kind of impact on the team.
All right. So what if Rob Francois was in that position?
And that's a really good question. Maybe Rob Francois.
We don't know.
Maybe he steps in and does a heck of a job. But there's a little unknown there.
Absolutely.
I think that there's just this trust with A.J. Hawk that they know if he's on the field, there's going to be no surprises. I mean, he's not going to mess up. You know, Winston Moss, we talked to him, the inside linebackers coach. I haven't talked to him as much as other assistants, and that's probably my fault. But when I have talked to him, you know, he's not a big talker. He's kind of a man of few words. I mentioned A.J. Hawk and criticism. For 10 minutes straight, he just talked on and on why he believed that was unwarranted. And a lot of it has to do with the expectations of a fifth overall pick. Ted Thompson talked about that as well. Look, if A.J. Hawk is 28th overall pick, maybe he isn't this polarizing figure that he is. But he was the fifth overall pick, the only one they've had in 21 years.
So let's – I gave him a B-minus last year.
Okay.
And I think maybe his first or second year, he probably got a B when he was making more big plays. I gave him a B minus. I mean, I came, and there was no big plays last year. He had been getting a lot of C's from me for about 4 or 5 years. And I got ripped, I think, from some emailers for being too high. I see the value in the guy. I also see someone that can't play, that they went immediately to Brad Jones as the dime backer over him because he really doesn't run.
Mm-hmm.
He runs well on the clock. He coming out, he had a great 40 time, 4.64 or something.
Wow.
Maybe lower than that, but he doesn't cover. He doesn't man cover. He doesn't zone drop well. He never forces a fumble. He's not an explosive hitter. His blitzing improved last year. That was part of the B-minus. His numbers were better. And he's smart, but I mean, I can't.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to know about this smart thing. I mean, how do we know? Everything I'm saying, these coaches, they all see exactly what I'm saying, and they choose to comment however they want to. So it's a tough one, but I thought you really got to the bottom of the guy. It was a great piece.
Oh, thanks, Bob. Yeah. I mean, you're right. It's one of those things that's tough to quantify. I mean, there isn't a statistic, a number, a value you can place to something like that. And look, I mean, I don't want this to be just a all-in-all glorification of the guy. Like you just said, he's got some imperfections. I mean, he probably should make more big plays. There's a reason that he isn't Brian Urlacher or an elite linebacker that maybe they hope they got with the fifth overall pick. Doesn't make those plays, but he just does a lot that we don't see. I mean, a lot with the untrained eye on the outside that we don't see, and it's really hard to come across somebody in that locker room on or off the record that says a bad word about the guy. Especially, you know, I think some scouts that I talked to, you know, from some rival teams, they had an opportunity to kind of trash the guy too, but it's they see it too. There's a reason he's there. And, yeah.
All right, Ty. Where do you want to go?
Well, you know, I think we should really talk about an interesting conversation you had recently with one Ted Thompson.
Oh. Well, okay. I talked to him today about the roster, and the story's going to be in Thursday's paper. Again, they're seventh youngest in the league. He's got the same, almost the exact same average age. It's 25.66 as he's had for 7 years. Again, 14 newcomers. But the only guy, Tyler, right now, those 53 guys, only four have ever been on another team's 53. Dietrich Smith, Pickett, Seneca Wallace, and somebody I'm forgetting. And only eight have signed with another team. So that's 12 out of 53 have been anywhere else. I guarantee if we did this with any other team in the league, I think that number would be in the 20s. Those are people who participate in UFA, trades, waivers.
John Kuhn, that was the other player.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, exactly.
Sorry.
So I just, after I talked to Ted, I just did some research, and it's just kind of astounding some of the how insulated they're becoming. And I'm not knocking it. I mean, this team wins, and he's 47-17 in the last four regular seasons. This team wins. I just thought, just getting to the bottom of how he builds this team. Tyler has not traded for a player since safety Anthony Smith in October of 2010. I asked Ted. He had no idea who was the last player he acquired. Since that trade, 101 players have changed hands in trades. Every team but Green Bay has done it. In 9 years, he's acquired six players by trade. Waivers. I mean, I can't even believe this. You know, the waiver period goes from the start of the league year in March until the end of the season. So this is, you know, a 10-month deal. In the last 6 years, the Packers have been awarded two players on waivers. Safety Micah Pellerin and wide receiver Andy Brewer, both in 2012 training camp. None. They used to claim guys. He claimed six in 06, and some of them became Charlie Peppra, Jarrett Bush, and Dave Rayner, all of whom made the club. UFAs. He signed two in the last 4 years, Jeff Saturday and Anthony Hargrove. I mean, there's just nobody doing this kind of thing who doesn't trade. He doesn't even claim on waivers, and he doesn't go UFA. What does he do? He puts a lot of pressure on his staff and himself to draft well. He has to draft well or they're going belly up. He puts a lot of pressure on all those guys to recommend good college free agents and get that thing done within an hour after the draft. And he puts a lot of pressure on McCarthy and that veteran staff to, as he said, to coach him up. And that's the way he is. I mean, Ted laughs about some of this stuff. He says, well, we claim guys on waivers.
Right.
And he's funny about it, you know. But he knows he doesn't.
It's just the way it works out is his line.
He just does it his way, and it's admirable in a lot of ways, the way they build this team. And because they're good, and look what happened. Five guys got claimed on waivers, and Mulligan got signed 2 days later by New England. That's six players off this club. And I'm not saying Green Bay has great depth, but they have six players who are attractive to other teams.
So who were Ted Thompson's influences? How do you come to this thinking in this way of building a team?
Ron Wolf was the antithesis of that. Yeah, Ron showed him the scouting system, how to grade players, that kind of thing, and how to work. But Ron tinkered constantly with that bottom quarter of the roster all the time. He just couldn't stop trading, waivers, signing people, wheeling, dealing, talking. And Ted was right at his arm, right at his elbow, and he doesn't do any of that. Yeah. Now, John Schneider does it in Seattle. John Dorsey.
Well, and they worked under Ted Thompson.
Yeah, and they worked under Ron, though. They all worked under Ron to begin with.
So
where did Ted get this? You know, he did it initially when he had a bad team in 05 and 06.
Mm-hmm.
But since he started seeing that roster come, they had 23 changes in their opening day roster in 06, McCarthy's first year.
Wow.
They've never had more than 14 since. But he just came, I think he came to the, what does he do best? Scout players.
Right.
And in order to maximize his best feature, well, he adopted this philosophy. It's the way it looks to me.
And like you said, you have to give a lot of credit to the scouting staff, the assistant coaches, because they do have a lot of pressure on them to develop guys where, well, you know, Dom Capers brings this up often. Last year, there were different points of the season when they have 6-7 rookies on the field defensively. And look, all these guys, their jobs are on the line. I mean, there's pressure for them to get these players ready. MD Jennings, an undrafted safety from Arkansas State, who when he shows up on campus in Arkansas State, he's 145 pounds soaking wet, and now he might be their starting safety here in the pros. It's just, there's a lot of those kinds of stories. You know, Sam Shields, a former college wide receiver, they coach him up, make him a cornerback. You're right. It is pretty unique, but, you know, I guess to play devil's advocate, someone could say, you have Aaron Rodgers, you have a championship window that's open. Go for broke. Go sign a free agent or two that can get you over the top. Mortgage the future just to a degree. But he doesn't do that. I mean, he keeps the long term in mind.
San Francisco does that. Baltimore does that. The Lions do that. They have veteran backups, you know. You know, another point, Tyler. I really believe that when you have a staff that believes so much in the offseason and training camp, there's a lot of teaching time invested in these players.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's just take the example of Desmond Moses, okay, at outside backer. He plays, I don't know, almost 50% of the snaps last year. He gets a turf toe August 1st. He's handicapped. He can't really run, but he sucks it up, and he goes all camp. Now, he's gone, and they keep Andy Malumba and Nate Palmer over him.
Right.
Now, Moses got a full year in. Isn't he better than Nate Palmer, the sixth-round pick?
You use this phrase a lot. Aren't they forcing themselves to get better at a position, at a spot, challenging themselves, going with upside what they don't know and over what they do know?
Palmer runs better than Moses, yeah. But Palmer's not as tough as Moses. And Moses is going to be off that turf toe at some point. I kind of like Moses. I'd take him over Palmer any day of the week, personally. What do I know? Okay. There's another one. All right, Sam Barrington over Terrell Manning at inside backer. You got a seventh rounder taking the spot of a fifth who's been here. He was here Manning was here 1 year.
1 year.
Yeah. You got a year of teaching. What do you think of that one, Ty? You saw these two guys side by side all camp long.
You know, I thought they were pretty even, you know, both aggressive, violent downhill kind of linebackers. And there were some points of the preseason where they let Manning just blitz. And you saw the potential in them. But I keep going back to a conversation with Capers on the story I did on Terrell Manning.
Mm-hmm.
And about his kind of confidence, borderline cockiness. And when I'm asking him about Terrell Manning, this is the middle of training camp. He just made a point to kind of stop me and say, well, Sam Barrington, keep an eye on him. He's all business. He's come in here. He's done his job. Sam Barrington. I mean, rarely do you get that out of a coach. And mm-hmm. I guess we kind of saw that they favored Sam Barrington.
I see that one. I'd go with Barrington, too. Really a slight edge. A lot closer there, though, than I think Moses and Palmer. But
definitely.
They went with the athletic guy in Palmer, you know, who runs 4.75 and Moses 4.93. You can't argue with that watch. That means a lot. I like Moses' toughness, though. Or was there another one?
What about tight end, where you go with Brandon Bostic over a DJ Williams? That's a very interesting.
That would be the call right there. Or Corliss over DJ Williams.
Right, right.
Either way. Okay. DJ Williams. Boy, you did another great. What a week you had, Tyler. You did another fantastic story on the life and times of DJ Williams. The day he was cut, it appeared. So you know about DJ. I mean, how do you see DJ with 2.5 years of coaching invested in the guy against Bostic and Corliss?
Well, I mean, as a person, kind of like in the story, here's a guy who's go-lucky personality, you know, back to the childhood of having an abusive father who would beat his mother regularly, and the family broke away, started anew, and it just kind of shaped DJ Williams, you know, as a person. I mean, He really doesn't get angry. He doesn't get mad. I asked him, do you get upset? And he said, not really. He brushes it off. He wears his white bucket hat and carries a teddy bear around to the bars and to pick up chicks and kind of loves life. But, I mean, it raises the question. He's like, DJ, do you take football serious enough? And he said, yeah, I believe I do. He believed he has that on-off switch. And I kind of agreed with him this camp. I thought he had a good training camp. I thought that he was a more willing blocker and he's somebody they could use at fullback. They could move around. And, yeah, he had some bad drops in the preseason game.
He did.
The deep one at St. Louis comes to mind. He had a couple others, I believe, against Arizona.
Two there, yeah.
Two in against Arizona. So they really wanted to see him transfer to game day, and he just couldn't do that in three summers. But I thought he did enough and was versatile enough to keep around. Just a lot like the decision of Mulumba and Palmer over Moses, Bostic, and even to a degree, Corliss over Williams. There's just a little more unknown. I mean, is Bostic going to develop into this big pass-catching weapon? Maybe Corliss, he's probably a better blocker at full strength once he gets his legs back under him. But to me, I mean, the DJ Williams release, it wasn't a surprise, but it kind of was too.
Size is very important here, and DJ Williams is a 6'2 guy, 6'2", 236. You got Bostic, who's almost 260. Corliss is 255. That's a factor. Bostic, I talked to a scout who watched this player all summer long.
Really?
They're just on these people, you know, and they know he's an athlete. And they got scouting reports on him out of Newberry. And so they watched him very closely. And at the end, you know, they just didn't think he had put it all together.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I don't know. The blocking, just everything. They're just you know, body language, the way he plays the game. They didn't think he was there. Now, he may not be there, and he's going to be their fourth tight end. I don't know what his role is going to be. Is he going to be inactive? Maybe. He could be.
Could be. I mean, teams, what does he give you?
Not much.
Right.
Ryan Taylor's up for sure.
Right. He never was that in doubt. I mean, he's so viable, special teams. He was going to
I guess so. Yeah.
But with Bostic, it is interesting. I mean, I thought he was kind of on the bubble as well with Jerry Fontenot saying that he's a player that when he's on the field, defenses kind of know what's coming, and they need tight ends that have that mystery about them. You don't know if it's going to be a run or a pass, and DJ Williams brought that. Bostic, we don't know quite yet.
No.
All right, well, what do you say, Bob? Should we get into some Twitter questions?
Yeah, Twitter, and then that should about do it. Yeah. All right. What do we got, Ty?
Got a lot here. Oh, my goodness. Angel Hernandez, all caps, ass. Do you think Eddie Lacy will be a factor this week? And I'm sure he typed it and said it exactly like that, Bob. Yes or no?
Yes, he better be, and I think he'll play well.
All right, here we go.
He better blitz pick up, too.
Mike Price, at the Mike Price, asks, what do you think about Clay Matthews saying to hit the quarterback / Harbaugh claiming that means they're going to be illegal hits.
Tyler?
Well, and Tom Silverstein, we should mention, colleague, he's out in California. He's covering this all. He was out for this. As he noted online in his story today, I mean, the league let all these teams know that these quarterbacks that are running the option aren't going to be treated like quarterbacks in the pocket. They're not going to be protected like that. Jim Harbaugh is not that happy with Matthew's comments and is looking into it himself, asking what's legal, what's illegal. I think that this is the problem that offenses are going to face. These quarterbacks are going to get hit. I mean, this is back to what our high school coaches told us. Just hit the quarterback every time. Say, oh, I thought he had the ball. I mean, it's going to take a few of these hits for teams to steer away from the veer, I guess. But I guess if it's blatant, if you're just like wailing on the quarterback, it's probably unnecessary roughness or something like that. It will be interesting, though, because these defenses aren't going to mess around anymore. They're not going to play patty cake and pillow fight here, are they, Bob?
When I used to watch the NFL in the 60s with my mom on Sunday afternoons, she would always yell, kill the quarterback. I mean, it's just forever,
didn't
right?
She?
Yeah, you know.
So what was that like? What was that like with your mom watching football?
Well, the lineups would be, the rosters and numbers would be in the journal, the Sunday Milwaukee Journal. So I'm growing up in the UP, so I would cut that out. And many times I'd make little pieces of paper for each player with his number. and I'd put them on the green carpet in front of the TV and line them up schematically, the 11 offensive guys and the 11 defensive guys, and they'd be on little pieces of paper. And in those days, you know, there wasn't any situation substitution. So, yeah. I mean, all three downs, you had 11 guys, and, you know, and I'd keep score on the running backs. I might enter the yards gain on each carry on his little piece of paper.
How old are you when you're doing this?
10, 11, 12, yeah.
Now, is this when you created the bad runs, good runs, deflections, targeted
now,
passes?
No, that came later, Ty. That came later.
Are you sure?
But I certainly played a lot of APBA pro football back then in the early 60s.
What is that?
Sports table game. See, now
is
all
this,
you guys...
Is this like an archaic fantasy football?
This is with cards based on the actual season. And I had this 61 or 62 seasons for APBA. You play them out with my neighbors, you know, and yeah, it was awesome. It was realism. Real life football. It was great stuff.
And you had the electric football too, right?
When
you
those?
Okay.
That kind of stinks. But it was fun. Yeah. You had that?
Yeah, but it was like an antique. Oh, okay. You know, it was one of those. You had to dust it off. Yeah, right.
Okay.
All right, let's get
what
to
else
a couple
we got
more
from the questioners.
Craig Danula at Maverick7WI asks, will the Packers play a more physical style on both sides of the ball this year? They appear to be very soft to my untrained eye, he says. And boy, if you said that around the players, they are getting sick and tired of that word, aren't they, Bob?
I never thought they were very soft. I said, as Mike McCarthy indicated at the combine, I thought they were in the middle last year in terms of physical play, in terms of relative to their brethren on the other 31 teams. That's all I'm saying. Obviously, everybody who plays pro football is not soft. But when you compare them to their peers, yeah, then some are. If you believe in some are good and some are bad, some are soft, some are physical. That's all I'm saying. And will they be more physical this year? I would think so.
You know what? And whether they are or they aren't, the perception... The national kind of rhetoric storyline that you hear so often with this team is that they are they soft, and that debate has been raging for a while now. The players hear it. They hate the perception. It's something they've been talking about all training camp. TJ Lang, all these guys, they say they want to change it. So we'll see if they do at Candlestick.
Yep.
All right, let's get to one more.
Who you got?
All right, this is from Steve Prendergrass. Ass. He says, I'm a TT believer, Ted Thompson, but has he committed GM malpractice with this backup QB situation? Good use of malpractice, Steve.
Steve.
Coming up big.
All right, so you going to open with that, Mr. Dunn?
You know, this is an interesting one because I guess back in May or June, if you were to say, look, Bob, I'll give you Graham Harrell, I'll give you B.J. Coleman, Vince Young, or Seneca Wallace to be the backup to Aaron Rodgers. Don't you say Seneca Wallace?
Yeah, I would. I like him better than those four players. Based on what I know from afar.
Right.
Yep.
I
agree with you.
Same vantage point. But you look at this and it's like, okay, you know, they wanted to give Graham Harrell another summer to see if it clicks. Give B.J. Coleman a chance to put pressure on Graham Harrell to see if he's a threat. During rookie camp, OTAs, mini camp, I guess there were some good signs enough to kind of keep that going into training camp. B.J. Coleman looks pretty rough at family night. Graham Harrell's doing Graham Harrell things. They go out and they sign Vince Young. I guess that's the malpractice. That's the confusing part is, all right, at that point, why Vince Young and not Seneca Wallace? Maybe they saw a different dimension, some athleticism as a backup quarterback. He could come in and win him a game, but it never clicked in 4 weeks. Good sign here and there, but it just didn't work out. Last minute, they bring in Seneca Wallace, and I don't know. It is kind of a comedy of errors, and it's not an ideal situation and everything, but it's hardly the gloom and doom scenario that a lot of fans are painting it to be. I mean, Seneca Wallace has been in the league 11 years. He's played in the West Coast.
But he doesn't know what he's doing this week. No idea what he's doing. I mean, if Rodgers does get hurt this week, it's going to cost them a game because they didn't handle this backup quarterback situation better. And anybody who says, Well, doesn't make any difference if Rodgers gets hurt, all is lost. Don't give him an easy way out. There are backup quarterbacks. They could have signed Kyle Orton. They could have made a play for Sean Hill before he re-signed in Detroit. There are people who can function and play well. So don't just give me that standard, oh, we're going 0-16 if Rodgers gets hurt. Right. That's an excuse.
I totally agree. That's garbage. That's the point that I omitted, is this is a problem that they should have avoided long ago in free agency by ponying up a little bit. In the draft, drafting a young arm to develop. I mean, that's something Ron Wolf did year in and year out. He was always bringing quarterbacks in the draft. So,
I mean, Harrell was a terrible athlete. That's why he wasn't signed for a year. And he got a little bit better athletically. You got to give him all the credit in the world. But at some point, if these guys really know quarterbacks, they had to cut this guy loose.
Agreed.
In terms of Young, I don't have any problem with him going right till the end. I was amazed he was that bad. You talked to those couple scouts there. You kind of saw this coming, and I really didn't. But he was abominable, and they had to pull the pin.
Well, I think that's the big difference with Young and Wallace. Wallace has accepted his backup role for over a decade. Young, I mean, he was a disappointment as a third overall pick, and there's questions, well, what's he really going to help Aaron Rodgers with on the sideline? All right, last one real quick, because Jeff Nelson's a big reader. All right,
Jeff.
Good man here. He asks, is it a concern that Rodgers, Cobb, and Nelson had almost no time together in the preseason games? ! Will this throw off timing?
Let's be succinct. Yeah, it's a problem. That passing game's not going to be as good as it would have been had these guys been playing games and snaps and all this. Yes, it's a problem.
I agree. I think it's absolutely an issue, because you saw it last year. Greg Jennings, Jeremichael Finley missed time. Cohesion, rhythm. It just took a few weeks to get going. It'll be interesting to see how the pieces fit together.
All right, let's just mention what we got coming in the next couple days. We got Tom Silverstein out in Santa Clara with the Niners. And tomorrow he's going to be in Reno interviewing Jeff Tedford at his home. Tedford got fired at Cal. They're going to discuss all things Aaron Rodgers, and that story is going to be in Saturday's paper. I can't wait to read that.
Oh, same here. It's going to be really interesting. So, yeah, definitely keep it tuned to the JS Packers blog for reports from San Francisco, Santa Clara, and reports from Green Bay. We'll try to keep it humming.
And we got our Packers section on Sunday. Rodgers gets into this long, long, long story, what he does between plays, and all our predictions, which we are not going to mention our predictions now, Tyler.
But I tell you what, and everybody out there reading, if you buy a newspaper, make it the special section. Bob's got a heck of a story coming on Aaron Rodgers, something that, you know, I think it's going to be something on Aaron Rodgers that a lot of people just haven't read yet. This is a guy who's been written about, talked about ad nauseum. This is going to be really interesting. Looking forward to it, Bob.
All right, Ty.
All right, should we go off with some more mediocre Jerry Jeff Walker music? Sorry, Dad.
Wow. Bob. Wow. Take care.
It's okay. It's all right. You guys be the judge. Let us know.